Chapter 14, Forms of Entrepreneurial Organization, page 152. Organization of business in modern times assumes several forms. For example, sole proprietorship, individual entrepreneur or one-man business, partnership, joint stock companies, industrial combination, cooperative enterprises, and state enterprises. Individual entrepreneur. The organizer of the one-man concern invests his own capital and may also borrow some. He rents a shop and hires the service of an assistant if necessary. He himself makes purchases and personally attends to the sales. He is his own manager. He initiates, organizes, directs all economic activity and takes the entire risks. Thus, the sole proprietor combines in his person the functions of capital, enterprise, and even labor in many cases. Advantages. This form of business organization offers several advantages. 1. The combination of financial interest and the sole responsibility for running the business is conducive to efficiency. 2. All transactions and operations are, through prudent management, performed in the most economical manner, and waste of all kind is eliminated. 3. It is possible to pay personal attention to all customers and give them entire satisfaction at minimum cost. 4. This form of business is also the easiest to start and the easiest to wind up. Limitations. But there are limitations also which the individual entrepreneur suffers. 1. The capital at the command of the sole proprietor is generally meager. 2. Also, one man feels very much handicapped in looking after the many sides of his business. 3. No first-rate business can be built up in this way. 4. It cannot enjoy the economies of large-scale production. Page 153. Partnership. Limitations of a one-man business give rise to another form of business organization, that is partnership. 2, 3 or more people combine, contribute capital and agree to share profits and bear losses in agreed proportions. Advantages. This form of organization offers several advantages over the one-man business. 1. It commands larger resources. 2. It is possible to establish wider personal contacts. 3. Business can be run on a larger scale, enjoying the various economies of scale. 4. The union of ownership and management is a spur to efficient and economical working. 5. Partnership responds promptly to changes in business conditions and is very highly adaptable. There is no red tapeism. And 6. The existence of unlimited liability curbs the speculative tendencies of the partners and prevents the launching of rash and risky enterprises. Disadvantages of partnership. If the partners work in close and cordial cooperation, the business is bound to go up. But this is a very big if. 1. In actual practice, partners behave in a selfish manner, doing the minimum and trying to get the maximum out of the business. 2. According to the law, partnership must be dissolved in the event of a partner's retirement, death, bankruptcy, or lunacy. There is thus no continuity of existence. 3. But the partnership handicap is the unlimited liability. The unlimited liability makes the policy of the firm timid and unenterprising. 4. Further, the partnership resources are too limited to enable the concern to do big business. On the whole, this form of organization cannot meet the requirements of modern trade and industry. Joint stock company. The joint stock company is undoubtedly the most important type of business organization today. It seeks to remedy disabilities and the handicaps of the partnership arising out of small financial resources and limited business talent. Merits. There are several advantages which can be claimed for this form of organization. 1. The company business is generally a large-scale business. Therefore, it enjoys all the economies of large-scale production, internal and external. For example, economies arising from the use of specialized labor and machinery, economy of space, of buying and selling, publicity, research or experiments, etc. 2. Besides these, there are several advantages peculiar to the organization itself. Shares are of small denomination and they suit all pockets and temperaments, ranging from the cautious to the speculative. Hence, large capital can be raised. 3. The fact that liability is limited and shares are transferable induces many people to subscribe to the share capital. Thus, small and scattered amounts of capital are mobilized and turned into productive channels. Habit of thrift is strengthened. 4. The limitation of liability enables new risks to be taken and many new fields of business to be opened out. The actual loss, if any, is widely distributed. The limited liability principle encourages the prospective investor to invest freely. He need not be afraid of losing all he has. This also helps in raising large capital. 5. From the point of view of the individual investor too, it has great advantages. Not only is his liability limited, but he is also enabled to spread out his investment. He need not place all his eggs in one basket. Further, he is not wedded to one company for good. Whenever he wishes to leave, he can sell his shares. 6. Unlike the partnership, the company is a legal person apart from the shareholders or directors. It can sue and be sued upon. It thus enjoys a perpetual existence. Further, it is on account of its everlasting existence that the investors can be persuaded to invest money, even though for years be no prospect of profit. Page 154. 7. Separation of functions has been effected between the capitalist and the entrepreneur. This specialization has enhanced productive efficiency because formerly the capitalist often lacked business ability, while the entrepreneur often lacked capital. This principle, therefore, is the secret of economic progress of the nations. 8. The management is democratic, efficient, and economical. Directors are elected by the shareholders. They are supposed to be persons with wider vision, outstanding administrative ability, and business acumen. Their expert advice and guidance are available to the company at a very moderate cost. Demerits. But there is the other side too. 1. The management is democratic only in theory. It is actually oligarchical. The directors are practically self-appointed and they remain there as long as they choose. For practical purposes, the shareholders have little voice. 2. Some of the directors may be unscrupulous and exploit the unwary investor. They may use inside knowledge for their own benefit. For instance, they may falsely give out that the company is going to fail, and when the value of shares goes down, they themselves purchase them. 3. Fraudulent publicity deceives the public. Rosy pictures given in the prospectus are sometimes misleading. 4. The directors are often lawyers or doctors and have no business experience or knowledge. Their only qualification is the share qualification. Such directors may not prove competent. 5. Business is depersonalized. The owners of the business, that is the shareholders, are concerned only with profit. The welfare of employees is utterly neglected. The paid managers express their helplessness. This loss of human touch is a great loss. The business becomes purely a mercenary affair. 6. The liability being limited and the shares being transferable, shareholders take no interest in the company. Few of them attend shareholders' meetings. Their apathy throws all the powers in the hands of a few directors. Thus, the company loses its democratic character. 7. Sometimes the directors launch rash enterprises because it is easy to play ducks and drakes with other people's money. 8. The organization is too ponderous and unwieldy. It cannot take quick decisions. It is only suited to a business which can be reduced to set rules, which are both foolproof and knave-proof. This form of organization is not fit for pioneering work, or where changing conditions require constant changes in policy of production, or where customers are won with difficulty and lost at the slightest pretext. Conclusion. In spite of these shortcomings, it must be said that in the absence of the joint stock principle, industrial development and efficient exploitation of the natural resources of a country would not have been possible. It has proved to be a powerful and an efficient engine of economic growth. Page 155. Cooperative enterprise. Producers' cooperation. As distinguished from the ordinary capitalist enterprise, there is the cooperative enterprise. The workers are painfully aware of the fact that the entrepreneur takes away the lion's share of the profits. Being convinced that they could themselves run the industry without the aid of the entrepreneur, the workers decide to take up the entrepreneurial work upon themselves. They contribute some capital themselves and borrow the rest. They elect their own foremen and managers and employ some staff. After paying all expenses, interest on capital, salaries and wages, the profits are divided among themselves. This type of cooperation is called productive cooperation or producers' cooperation. Producers' cooperation has been generally a failure. The reasons are not far to seek. With the disappearance of the entrepreneur, profits also disappear. It is his initiative, power of direction and organizing ability which produce profits. The workers are not in a mood to pay well their managers. The elected foremen are not able to enforce discipline over their own people. Everybody's business is nobody's business. Little wonder that there are no profits. Consumers' cooperation. There is another type of cooperation which has a long record of success. It is consumers' cooperation. The arrangement is that the consumers of a locality contribute capital to small shares and start a store of their own. The cooperative store buys goods from wholesalers like other dealers and sells these goods to their members at the ordinary market rates. Profits are distributed among the members in proportion to their purchases or, what is more common, in proportion to the share capital. Generally, share capital is equally contributed and profits are therefore also equally divided among members. These cooperative stores have been splendid successes and some of them count thousands among their members. In several cases, they have not contented themselves with merely retailing of consumers' goods but have added their own manufacturing organizations. They are run on ordinary capitalist lines, employing high-grade managers working under the control of able committees. The cooperative movement has proved specially suited to agricultural and allied occupations. It was successfully applied first in Germany and Denmark, and it has now spread to almost every country. In India, cooperative departments are functioning in every state. Mostly these are agricultural credit societies. But non-credit and non-agricultural societies are also being established. Special attention is being paid to the establishment of cooperative farms and service cooperatives under the five-year plan. State enterprise. In every country, there are many public undertakings run by central or state governments or local bodies. Postal and telegraph arrangements are generally under the central government, and public utility services like water supply, gas, electric supply, or tram or bus services are managed by municipal corporations. The organization of state enterprise is on the same lines as private enterprise, with the usual paraphernalia of general manager, foreman, works manager, accountant, treasurer, departmental heads, and so on. The work is done generally in the same manner as in a joint stock company. But there is a fundamental difference. All the employees are government servants with fixity of tenure and prospect of getting a pension on retirement. Capital is provided from state coffers, which comes ultimately from the taxpayers. The profits, if any, too, go to the state. Page 156. Merits. State enterprise has certain advantages of its own. The credit of the government stands higher than of any private individual or company. The state has therefore a special facility in raising capital and on favorable terms. In underdeveloped countries like India, the state has a special role to play in creating an infrastructure of overhead capital, like the development of means of transport and communications. These enterprises require large amounts of capital and are generally not sufficiently productive, in the narrow sense of the term, to yield enough profits to attract private capital. Yet, they are crucial for the future development of the country. Hence, government has to step in to establish these enterprises. From this point of view, public enterprise assumes a greater importance in underdeveloped countries than in the developed countries. Moreover, a modern state is called upon to reduce inequalities in income and wealth. The traditional weapons of fiscal policy and progressive taxation, however, have serious limitations in being used as an instrument of bringing about greater equality. Therefore, there are many people who advocate the state operation of enterprises, the state appropriating to itself the profits of such undertakings. Further, government is in a position to command the best talent. Government service attracts first-class brains. There is a certain glamour about government service. Thus, from the point of view of the human factor too, the state enterprise is favorably placed. The state enterprise is generally a monopoly. It has all the advantages of monopoly. The customer is assured. Expenditure on publicity is unnecessary. Better service at less cost is the usual rule in a government undertaking. Demerits. But economists are generally agreed that governmental machinery in the matter of running a business compares very unfavorably with private management. The government manager's tenure is fixed. He gets a fixed annual increment and will get promotion according to seniority. He cannot therefore be expected to show the same degree of initiative or hard work as the manager of a private company. The latter may receive notice to quit any fine morning if the management is convinced that he is not doing his best. A government employee will not be much interested in lowering costs or improving the methods because he himself will gain nothing thereby. The state employee who has no ambition to rise can flaunt the senior officers. At the most, he will be transferred or his increment stopped if it comes to the worst. He does not consider himself the servant of any particular person, but the servant of the impersonal state, and that makes all the difference. In a government-managed enterprise, routine replaces responsibility. There is the tyranny of the desk or red tape. There are exasperating delays. A paper has to pass through very many hands, none making any material alteration or improvement. Frequent transfers, nepotism, and entry into service by the back door, merit being not necessarily the test of promotion, are some of the drawbacks in a government enterprise. If there are losses, nobody seems to bother. There is no counterpart of the shareholders whom the directors have to face every year. The taxpayers are dumb. If there is loss, nobody really feels that it is his loss. Their representatives in the legislature will no doubt raise a hue and cry. Yet, the government usually has a comfortable majority and the government caravan continues to move on. Forms of organization of public enterprise. Public enterprises may be organized as a departmental, that is run by a government department, example railways and post and telegraph in India. B. Corporation, for example, Life Insurance Corporation of India, created by a special act of Parliament. C. Limited Liability Company, registered under the Company Act. Page 157. Role of public enterprise in underdeveloped countries. In underdeveloped countries, public enterprises are badly needed to initiate and accelerate the developmental process. They can promote economic development in the following ways. 1. By creating social and economic overheads. Only state can provide educational facilities and technical training, medical aid and public health measures, and developed irrigation and means of transport, all which is indispensable for economic growth. 2. By building basic heavy industries. It is beyond private enterprise to develop basic heavy industries like iron and steel, heavy electrical and heavy engineering industries. But these are essential for providing a base for industrial development. 3. By optimum allocation of resources. Private enterprise is notorious for misallocation of the country's resources lured by profit motive. Public enterprise, which is guided by social gain rather than private profit, is needed to correct this tendency and help in bringing about an optimum allocation of resources. 4. Ensuring balanced regional growth. State, as a guardian of people's welfare, takes special pains to develop backward regions. For this purpose, industrial units are deliberately located in backward areas. In this way, regional balanced development is brought about. 5. Utilizing surplus labor for capital formation. The public enterprises favorably located can drain out from the rural areas surplus labor in the form of disguised unemployment and use it more productively. This will promote economic development. 6. Creating investable surplus. The profits of public enterprises are a good source of finance for economic development. 7. Planning made effective. If economic planning relied on private enterprise, it would be very ineffective. Hence, public enterprise is needed to make it effective. Pricing policy of public sector enterprise. Public sector enterprises, PSE, were established with an economic and social objective to be achieved within a particular time frame. On the basis of these objectives, the following price policy was introduced. We now have a very, very complicated diagram which unfortunately I cannot even describe. So I will only read out the theory. 1. Monopoly price. The aim was to obtain certain amount of profit for providing other government expenditure, including welfare activities. This used to include ONGC, oil, electricity, etc. 2. No profit, no losses basis. In this, the aim of the government was to provide the services without earning profit, but to recover the cost of providing the services. In other words, no loss, no profit. 3. Marginal cost pricing. In this case, the government is charging only the marginal cost. In other words, the government is charging only the amount of additional cost incurred to manufacture additional unit. Page 158. Disinvestment policy of public sector enterprises. Immediately after independence, the government put more emphasis on socialistic pattern of the society. Those days, the economy was picking up and required inducement. The Keynesian concept of welfare state was applied in different countries of the world. The government thought of bringing more important a role of public sector enterprise. The objective of bringing about more public sector enterprises was 1. Bring about basic and key industries. 2. To accelerate the rate of economic growth. 3. To achieve balanced regional development. 4. To develop infrastructure. 5. To mobilize capital formation. 6. To reduce the concentration of economic power, etc. Up to 1970, the public sector enterprises started making good progress and contributed a lot to different economic variables. Later, due to certain amount of inefficiency, political interference, problem of finance, poor and non-cordial industrial relations, these units started incurring heavy losses. On the other hand, due to the signing of GATT agreement and the new industrial policy of 1991, the government initiated a process of disinvestment in public sector units. Though the privatization and disinvestment policy was started in 1984, now the objective of the government completely changed. The government aimed at 1. Concentrating on other areas of human development. 2. The amount of money received by means of disinvestment will be invested on priority sector, which will help in economic development process. 3. To reduce the burden on budget, which was due to the losses of public sector enterprise. 4. Modernization of existing profit-making public sector units. 5. Other social security measures of displaced workers. Though the policy is good in light of the competitive nature of the economy due to globalization and liberalization, but the disinvestment policy has raised many questions. How the government will best make use of these resources so that the money should not be misused. On the other hand, the government must see that employees of these units are not put to hardship. Proper policy may give benefits. Otherwise, private sector as well as foreign sector may take undue advantage and exploit the economy. Key terms: partnership, joint stock, company, cooperation, state enterprise. Questions. Question 1. Discuss the different forms of business organization. Question 2. What are the merits and demerits of joint stock companies? 3. Explain pricing policy of public undertakings. Discuss the role of public enterprises in UDCs. With this, we come to the end of chapter 14.